And his new book is called The Burning Blue, The Untold Story of Christa McAuliffe and NASA's Challenger Disaster. Kevin Cook, good morning.
Good morning, Nancy and Jason. How are you?
Great. Thank you. Thank you for being with us. A 35-year anniversary this past January. And for people that, you know, that is a day that, and unfortunately we have a number of those, a day that, you know, if you were over the age of probably 13 or so, you remember where you were and what happened on that horrible day.
That's true, and I certainly remember where I was standing. I think it's one of those shared memories that we have almost as a nation. It was seen again and again so many times at a time when the television replay, we're inundated with these moments now that make news and command your attention. And that was still relatively new in 1986. We saw it over and over and over again. I think it's one of those shared moments that a lot of us feel like, well, I pretty much know what happened. I felt sort of that way when I began this project and found out that the story behind the story is so fascinating, and the lives of not only Christa McAuliffe, but the other crew members that were on the space shuttle were remarkable and aren't so well known at all.
Kevin, and as I mentioned before we started talking to you, about the wide variety of topics, and this is more of a trying to peek into how your brain works, how do you go from all these topics? How do you one day go, you know what, I know it's been 30-something years, I'm going to write a book about the Challenger disaster. How do you find that? Is it just personal interest?
There were some cobwebs in that view of the dark corners. I am fascinated by stories that are somewhat dimly remembered. But again, the story behind the story is remarkably fascinating. You really have to be pretty drawn to a topic to commit years of one's life to the research and the writing of a book like this. This is one that I could name Christa McAuliffe. I didn't know the names of the other crew members.
Yes.
You find out the whole lives of astronauts are so fascinating. They're such remarkable people. That was certainly true in this case. Maybe the most diverse, certainly up until that time, crew that had ever flown toward space.
Right. Now, of course, you mentioned Christa McAuliffe because that's who most people had talked about. At that time, you know, the space shuttles had been up a few times, right? And so yes. The fact that we had a citizen, a teacher aboard, that was what most people were thinking about when they said, oh, the shuttle's going to go up and it's going to have a teacher on board. You know, that was, you know, so people really grieved. And as you mentioned, there were great people on board, but we remember her.
It's interesting. You mentioned the different diversity there. I remember that as a kid thinking, that's interesting. There's the teacher. She's a woman. We have this guy. There's an African-American guy. There's a Japanese guy who was on there. He's from Japanese.
Asian-American.
Asian-American,
yeah. That's right.
Yeah, so...
Christa McAuliffe certainly was... I mean, she was catapulted from a relatively small city social studies teacher. Suddenly, she's on the Tonight Show. She's on the Today Show. She's on the cover of magazines. You mentioned the black astronaut, Dr. Ronald McNair, was the second black astronaut. He also happened to be a sensational saxophone player who played the first musical selection ever in space on a previous mission. He was also a black belt who would smash concrete blocks with a single karate chop and then tell you the physics behind that.
like that.
Those are the things that keep you going when you're researching a story like this that just gets more fascinating, and I hope that's what The Burning Blue communicates.
Okay, so in your book you talk about the untold story, but let's talk a little bit about how this thing even happened. I mean, when you look into it seemed like there were a few things. There was obviously a mechanical issue that they have questions about, and then you had the pressure on NASA to get this thing up because it had been delayed, right?
That's right. Many times in a debacle the day before with a bolt that someone could have fixed by going to the local hardware store, but the local hardware store wasn't available before a space shuttle mission. There was enormous schedule pressure. This launch was okayed on a morning that was so cold that the citrus groves around Cape Canaveral are freezing. It was known to the engineers involved that cold could compromise a launch like this and cause a disastrous problem. But the pressures were so great that that the managers told the engineers, well, we're going to overrule you. It's time to take off your engineer's hat, put on a manager's hat. The call was made, the launch did happen, and of course with disastrous results that so many of us remember where we were standing when we saw what happened on TV.
One of the things I saw in the book as well is there was some kind of a memo or something from the engineers, and did it say help or something? Months
before? This is a red flag, yes. And of course, the great physicist, Nobel Prize winning physicist Richard Feynman, looked into that as part of the investigation afterward. There's no doubt that the risks were known, but what he said was, space shuttles kept flying. You know, there were missions after mission after mission before the delays that led to this one, and there were no accidents. The astronauts all came home safely. So the reasoning at NASA at that time was, well, it must be safe. They keep coming home quickly. They keep coming home safely. And as Richard Feynman put it, that was like playing Russian roulette.
Right.
The astronauts.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about what happened in the sky that horrible day. At first, I think people thought that the capsule exploded in the sky. That was not the case, right?
That's true. It looked like it did. That was the giant external fuel tank exploding, and it actually gave more thrust, more boost to the crew compartment, which sheared off from the rest of the space shuttle. Tragically, the inside the shuttle, the crew was still alive, and they were not killed until the shuttle came all the way down and crashed into the Atlantic Ocean at 207 miles per hour. During that time, they had emergency air packs. There was no way of escaping, but they did have emergency air packs, and at least three of those were activated after the explosion that we all saw. I believe that they performed heroically in those last minutes, trying to save each other and the mission.
Yeah, and obviously, the way the capsule was falling to the ground to hit the water, it wouldn't, no matter what they could have done, there really wasn't anything at that point. Some had thought maybe they would have lost consciousness inside of the capsule. You're saying that some of those oxygen masks were used?
They were used as oxygen supplies, and one thing that would have caused them to lose consciousness, and this can certainly happen in an event such as this, is that the capsule will spin crazily, and no one could survive or stay conscious during that. One of the most poignant details that I found was that as the capsule fell, it was trailing wires, umbilical wires that had connected the air and electrical operation to the rest of the shuttle. Those trailed behind like the tail of a kite, and it stabilized the fall of the crew compartment, enabling at least some of them to do what they did to try to retake control of the shuttle. And I think that's a remarkable thing to contemplate. These are not the kind of people who panic. They try to save the mission and each other.
Yeah. I've watched a lot of videos. I've watched a lot of things about this, and I feel like I know things, but you did all this deep research. Did you ever find out if the astronauts ever knew about the behind-the-scenes fighting that was happening?
They didn't. This was not shared with the astronauts. It's one thing that changed at the astronaut office there at the Johnson Space Center in Houston. Afterward, concerns like that had to be shared with the crew. They were kept from the crew in this instance. And Dr. June Scobie Rogers, the commander's widow, who was an enormous help to me and a remarkable person, felt that that's the kind of decision that should be left to the commander. The commander makes all the important decisions once they're in orbit, but until they are in orbit, those things are made by NASA, by mission control, all the important decisions, and it wasn't shared with the astronauts before the launch.
Is there, as we, you know, this, again, the 35th anniversary of this, you mentioned the astronauts are heroes, I think everyone would agree. After reading your book, is there someone that people will go, oh, that guy's also a hero. We may not know his name, but his story. Because I know about one guy. I just want to see if your answer matches where I'm going. Curious.
Well, I think the Commander Dick Scobee and the pilot Michael Smith. Michael Smith was one of the ones whose personal emergency air pack was activated afterward. He threw switches that were protected switches that can't be thrown accidentally in an attempt to take control, to restore electricity and take control of that. I think he's certainly a hero. I think Ellison Onizuka is a hero. Ellison Onizuka is almost certainly the one who had to reach up and activate, because Smith couldn't do it himself, the air pack for pilot Mike Smith.
Mm. You know, I was thinking, I saw recently Alan McDonald passed away. He was the guy that was trying to stop everything, and his story.
Oh, yes, he certainly was.
Yeah.
Behind the scenes, he was heroic himself, and that's what NASA is trying to inculcate now, I think. There is a lessons learned program that says we've got to have the backs of people who will stand up and put their careers at risk to say, this is too dangerous, let's fix the problem before we launch.
Yeah.
That guy's story is fascinating, and the book itself is fascinating
as
well. Yes,
so the book is The Burning Blue, The Untold Story of Krista McAuliffe and NASA's Challenger Disaster, and there's just so much more, Kevin Cook, for people to get if they want to grab that book. It's a great book.
Thanks so much.
Thank you for being with us. Thanks for coming on.
I greatly appreciate it.
Enjoy it.
Okay, take care. There's more in it. You know, there's politics that also, unfortunately, even back then, people had claimed that, did the president at the time, who was Ronald Reagan, was he pressuring to get this done because he had a State of the Union speech? That was not true. I'm just saying, unfortunately, back then, but he actually gave, he put off the State of the Union address that year and gave one of, they say, his best and most moving speeches. If you remember what Ronald Reagan had to say, you know, a 650-word address ended with a moving quote from the poem High Flight by an American pilot who was killed while flying for the Royal Canadian Air Force in World War II. Of the astronauts, Reagan said, "We will never forget them, nor the last time we saw them this morning as they prepared for their journey and waved goodbye and slipped the surly bonds of Earth to touch the face of God." I remember it to this day, what he had to say.